You're listening to the Food Talk Show. Hi there, this is the Food Talk Radio Show, and each week we taste innovative new food and drink products, really bad part of the job, and we take a look at the latest in food tech from around the UK. Hello everyone, my name is Sue Nelson and I'm joined by the wonderful Guy Routledge.
Routledge.
I love saying that because it really annoys you. Guy Routledge, of course it
Sue,
is.
Sue, you do this every time.
And Guy's the co-founder of Food Rush. Hi Guy, how are you this week?
I'm very good, thank you. How are you doing, Sue?
Good, not so bad at all. Before we talk to our lovely guests, is there anything in the news that's caught your eye this week at all?
Anything in the news? Oh, you're putting me on the spot now.
Yeah, I mean, obviously apart from Donald Trump. I mean, I just...
See, I
every week you just think, well, you can't do anything more stupid
it's
worse.
Like it's like a soap opera, isn't it?
It is.
I try and avoid the real news. I kind of focus on the food news. It's slightly more interesting and relevant to the kind of things that I do day to day. But yeah, no, I try and avoid the real news. I really do.
Well,
Some people think it's terrible, but...
I started following him on Twitter because I thought you should.
No.
Yeah, 24 million people, followers. Can you believe the power of that? Every time he does a tweet, it says... Millions, literally millions of people.
I really don't know how to deal with that at all.
I don't know how it works. Can you imagine being his press people or somebody remotely organises stuff around him and then you're thinking, oh no, he's picked his phone up again. Oh no, he's picked his phone up again. What's he going to say this time?
It's like, unbelievable.
Yeah, it's very, very frightening.
I think the less said about that, the better.
Yes, it is. Anyway, we've got two lovely guests here. I'm being outnumbered today, so it's a boy studio today. We have got Adrian Maceda from Cheerfy. And basically this is a Wi-Fi based customer recognition thing, so we're going to have a chat with Adrian about that. And I have Rahi, and Rahi's bought some lovely drinks in, natural energy drinks of his own, so we're going to have a little tasting of those. So welcome Adrian, Rahi. Let's start off with Adrian, shall we? So tell us a little bit about why you started, and we're going to find out about what it does in a minute, but tell us a little bit about why you started off Cheerfy.
Well, for us, it's been a journey. This started like 4 years ago in two different companies ago, and we learned, first of all, the value of Wi-Fi beyond connectivity. We then learned the value of connecting businesses and customers. And we ended up with Cheerfy, originally Cheers, where everybody knows your name. And
Cheers, the American bar, you mean, the program.
Exactly.
I'm sure there were a few trademark issues with that, though, weren't there?
A few, especially in the US. And we wanted to make a difference to customer experience in stores, and that's how we started Cheerfy.
And you see, I'm a bit old-fashioned.
All right.
I was born in the 60s, you can probably tell. And I don't really like people getting their phone out when in a restaurant. But I mean, I guess now everybody does. So you've got no choice.
I think it's pretty common now, yeah. People live their lives on their phones.
I love it when you see a couple that are clearly, you know, not an old couple necessarily, but, you know, they're obviously a couple and I don't know, they might be married or whatever. And they don't even speak to each other the whole 2 or 3 hours, but they're actually looking at their phone.
I was in a popular chain coffee house recently, and I was there doing some work with my partner, because you know that's what we do. We work together.
You don't speak to each other either, then?
We don't speak to each other about personal things, just work things now. She has to book a calendar invite if we want to talk about anything. We were there for about 3 hours, and there was an Asian couple at the table next to us, and they were both just on the phone the whole time. They didn't say a word to each other. They were just, you know, one was reading the paper, and one was on an iPad or something like that. Very, you know. Very interesting way of...
I suppose it's better than just a dull silence, possibly. So anyway, that aside, well, I'm not running down what you're doing, Adrian, but you have to accept that everybody's in eating places for different reasons as well. Some people are go there to work, aren't they?
No, absolutely. I think more and more the newest generations are mobile first, and they're continuously on their mobile. However, we built Cheerfy not really asking people to be all the time on their phones. Actually, we built the technology so that they can be detected and recognized without them having to pull out their phone from their pockets. So the whole intention is to enhance customer experience, not get in the middle of it. So a key part of that is being as transparent and as supportive of the experience that the operator wants to offer to their customers.
So how does it work then? So you go in, and I know Guy's got a particular beef about this. You think Wi-Fi generally is quite bad, don't you?
Well, see, I live my life on my phone, especially when I'm out of the office. I'm always on Google Maps to get from wherever I need to go. I'm have my whole calendar planned out on my phone. And so if you go into a cafe to either to have a break or because you need to do some work, you need to log on to the Wi-Fi, and they're usually terrible. If they're not offering their own service, they're offering one of these kind of popular cloud-based things.
Oh, I hate BT OpenZone. I'm going to just die when that comes up. I'll switch my phone
off. So the quality of the connection is poor. You end up having to type in. It's almost like you have to subscribe for, a different person's Wi-Fi in every place that you go. And as a customer, it's quite frustrating. As a business, I can imagine they relish the opportunity to know who is coming into their shops once, multiple times. Can you tell us a little bit about the kind of information that you are able to provide to the suppliers?
Before you say that, Adrian, does it just recognise you when you come in, though? Is that what you're saying? So do you have to log on?
Yeah, so let me tell you what we do.
Yeah.
And then I tell
you... We should have asked that to start with, really. We're not really handy, wouldn't
it? Just
carry on.
So the idea here is to bring the beauties of online personalization, that sort of experience that Amazon, Netflix, Google, all of them got us used to in terms of providing you personal, relevant, contextual content when you're online, to the physical stores, to restaurants, to coffee shops. So what that means is that we are going to use Wi-Fi on one side as a means to an end to detect customers as they walk into a restaurant. Second, we're going to answer your question about data. We're going to build a customer profile based on some information from social networks, some information from a customer survey that they're going to fulfill for a business. It's a 10-second operation for them, and it's particular to each business that they visit. Third, the employees might add to your profile. Excuse me. And fourth, we will integrate information from customer databases, like from apps or loyalty schemes, anything that the operator may have, to enhance that profile. So what that allows you to do then is to engage customers in real time, instantly, as they come, stay, or leave your venue. And we're going to do that through automatic personalized messages, i.e. texts or emails.
I know you've got it in some Michelin-starred places.
We do.
How did they use it? Because you could literally use it for anything, couldn't you, I guess?
So that's an interesting point. So that's how we started. We built this product originally thinking of a high-end scenario. And our first customers are actually Michelin-starred restaurants. And their approach to this is they want to personalize the experience personally, as well verbally, by essentially being able to detect their guests, remember their preferences, so that when you come back, they're able to engage you personally, remembering what you've done, what you liked.
So what they're going, hello, madam. Did you know that you had the chicken starter last time you were here? That sort of thing.
Very useful.
Something like that, maybe a bit more elaborated.
You had the chicken starter with the cheese on the side, madam. That's something.
Classy restaurant. Mm.
However, what we learned is that that takes a lot of effort from a restaurant, actually. So there are only so many venues that are prepared to take on something like that. The most popular use case today are actually delivered by restaurant chains. But instead of engaging customers with their front of house, what they do is engaging them through Cheerify electronically on arrival, presence, or departure, so that they can recommend you through a text, maybe a dish of the day, a set of specials that, of course, match your profile if you have a certain allergy or if you have a certain taste in terms of fish or meat or vegetarian, or congratulate you for your birthday, or ask you for your feedback when you leave, or actually automatically call you back. And all of this done in such a way that when you read the text or the email, it looks like it's been written to you by a person. Mm. Doesn't look like a generic
So they can say on their text, do you know, you cheapskate, you only left 50p tip last time. You couldn't leave more this time, could you? You know, that's something.
Well, with a bit good, I guess.
So it's not a... we were talking just a little bit before the show started about the kind of the person-to-person interaction and that kind of using technology to enhance the human interactivity. But correct me if I'm wrong, it is still like a machine that is you know, sending you a message. It's your phone or your tablet or your laptop, perhaps. So you're getting like push notification type stuff, is it?
Yes, it's a short answer, but it can be used in the first way as well. Yeah. If you are a venue that
has the capacity to do that.
Mm. So meaning a front of house staff that are trained and ready to deliver that sort of experience. Mm. But in the majority of venues out there, you'll probably find the second use case, which is automatic engagement from the platform. But of course, the engagement is defined by each operator depending on what they want to achieve.
Yeah, of course.
So in essence, you're giving them the technology in order for them to decide how best to use it. Because I wouldn't want to be stalked, actually. You know, if I'm going to a restaurant, it's like, oh, please leave me alone.
Well, yeah, I mean, that was something that I was going to ask as well, is that, you know... More often than not, you go somewhere with a mission or with purpose. You know, you just need a coffee, or you want to take a break for lunch, or you're going for a meeting in a cafe, in a coffee shop or a restaurant or something like that. And it's very hard for people to kind of know why you're there, like what the purpose is. But if it is this kind of automated thing, you walk through the door, they go, oh, hi, welcome back. And it's maybe...
It's your preferences, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's understanding your preferences.
It must be very complicated to kind of get that kind of full picture of somebody.
Some people like a lot of interaction, don't they, at a cafe?
And some people don't.
And some, because, you know, I don't really like people. I wasn't really established that.
Is this going to become a running thing?
No, actually, I don't want anybody to speak to me. I just don't want people to leave me alone.
Well, if
they got me a text message, I'd be really, really cross.
But it's not a person speaking to you.
No, it's not that. No. I just want to get on with what I'm getting on with. But then there might be other occasions when you do. You know, you do want to interact. And that could just be the same person with different preferences at different times.
Exactly. So if you think about it, if you manage to send a note, a message to somebody about something that is relevant and makes sense at that moment when you receive it, you are very likely not to be annoyed. As I was telling Guy at the beginning, one of my favorite chefs is Otto Lenghi. Mm. And
good place to go.
It's delicious.
Good place to go.
It's excellent. Mm. Any time I see anything about him or from him, I will read it. So in a similar way, when you go to a venue that is maybe your usual coffee shop, a restaurant that you typically go, or even if you don't go that often, but what they talk to you about in that text or in that email makes sense and adds value to you because it recommends you something based on your preferences, then that adds value to the person and it can be very useful. So if you zoom out, restaurants, what they are experiencing today is an ability to essentially drive more revenue by essentially being able to recommend in a far more targeted way on arrival before people buy, so that you can impact the experience and potentially the buying behavior of somebody. They're able to understand what people felt, the feedback of their experience in real time. So they have an opportunity as well, whenever they have there's a guest with a bad experience, they have an opportunity to act on it
and put it right,
exactly, which is of huge value to our customers. And even the ability to call customers back after a while without visiting, always in an elegant way that is personal, that makes sense, depending on your business, results in essentially having a higher customer frequency or higher recurrency in their customer base, which is, at the end of the day, what any business
wants. It's quite useful
if
you've got a food allergy or intolerance, isn't it? And you arrive and somebody would go, yep, we know you're gluten-free. Mm. We've already got your menu ready for you.
And that's
the kind of thing
that they might already do at a Michelin-starred restaurant. So they were all, I guess they didn't have as much of a pain point there because that was already very much built into their into their process and into their service. Yeah. Whereas the everyday chain, it's a bit of a crapshoot as to, you know, how good the coffee is going to be on any given day based on who's making it or which branch you happen to go into. So I can see a huge, huge benefit to that kind of thing there.
But you essentially are providing the technology which allows somebody to shape their marketing, their service, or how they collect data. So you're not recommending what they do with it. I mean, you can give them some examples. What you're doing is you're giving them technology to then for them to then use it in the way that they see fit.
That's a great point. So yes, our core service is the actual technology, but actually we find ourselves always working with our customers in how they should engage with their customers, because we're still at an early stage. So there is every time that we have a conversation about this, there's a new idea, a new way to engage guests being proposed. So the first thing we do is always jog people's minds in terms of how they can use Cheerify. So we don't just give them the software. We also work with them on how to engage their customers. Then, of course, it's completely up to them.
Yeah.
The language they use, the whether they do it or not, it's completely up to each operator.
I mean, I do think one of the things that people do like is a bit of recognition, especially if you're with a group of people, you know, and somebody would then... I mean, if you're a waiter, you'd have to have an encyclopedic knowledge of people's names, wouldn't you? Which would be really difficult to achieve.
Well, especially with the chains, where there's so many people coming and going every day. And there probably is more likely to be repeat business there.
Mm.
But the chance of you being seen is quite slim.
But it would be quite good. You say, oh, hi, Pete, you're back again, you know, and that actually makes you feel good if you're with a group of people.
If it is the right message at the right time to the right person, then it is probably not going to be seen as an annoyance and a, you know, oh, get out of my way, I'm, you know, just here to, you know, be alone.
Yeah. Rahi, obviously, you're sort of, at the moment, you're producing food.
Yes.
But I know you know a lot about entrepreneurship, so we'll talk to you about that later.
Sure.
Have you got any thoughts about what Adrian's doing?
Yeah, it's very interesting, especially on the feedback side. So I generally find I only really give feedback if it's either very positive or very negative.
Mm.
And on the negative side, usually I find, or even on the positive, I often just don't give it because I don't really have the opportunity and I don't want to go out my way and ask them for a note or something to actually give the feedback. Whereas here, at least every time something really good or really bad happens, I can very quickly let the restaurant know. And I'm sure they could learn from that and use that and capitalise on that as well.
Mm. I mean, I think it's important to tell people if something's wrong, not because I want money back or whatever, but because
so
I run...
So they can improve it.
Well, because I run a business. And if
there's
something not right in my business, I would want somebody to tell me because then I can do something about it.
I appreciate that.
And of course, it's the way you do it that's important. But you know, I do want people to point out if something's not running very smoothly.
Of course, yeah.
But most, I mean, British people are just... terrible. They won't do that. Like, because it's embarrassing and you better not, or, you know, it's rude to do that. But
I wonder if part of that is because of the disconnect between when feedback is asked for.
Mm.
So if you, you know, for example, you stay in a hotel or you take a trip somewhere, they then send you an email once you've got back to say, how was it? You're like, well, I'm home now. I'm back to normal life. It doesn't matter. And, you know, you may or may not go back there. So there's no real incentive for you to feedback. Whereas, with the Cheerify example, if it's real time and you're there and you're literally, you know, they know that you've just paid the bill, so they can say, you know, how was it? Or
exactly right, getting the feedback in real time, right after the customer has experienced whatever they have experienced, makes a huge difference in the numbers, in the content, in the willingness to for somebody to offer that feedback, because it's hard on your mind. And just to give you a statistic. With some of our customers, they collected in 3 months 5 times more reviews than they did in TripAdvisor over a whole year.
Amazing.
Wow.
And this is just of that simple fact. Ask immediately after people leaves, and that way you have a lot more from your customers.
Yeah, it's that right time thing again. Very good.
It has to be simple, though, as well.
So just sort of quickly, what your background, you've always been involved in the tech industry, I think, and you're sort of a bit brainy in the telecommunications and telecommunications engineering side, a bit of a boffin at that sort of side of it. And obviously you went to university in Madrid. What are you seeing in terms of technology? Are you excited about the stuff that you're seeing out there at the moment? I mean, I do think Wi-Fi is poor, actually, in this country, but, you know, that aside, are you excited by some of the possibilities?
Oh, yeah, I'm very excited. And actually, Wi-Fi in this country, in my opinion, UK is one of the most developed countries when it comes to Wi-Fi.
Are you joking?
Out there,
better Wi-Fi in the middle of some African desert sometimes.
Well,
but I suppose we don't live where I live.
I'm very excited about the everything that's going on, especially here in London. London is a huge hub for innovation. And I think when you look at what's happening in terms of in-store technologies, there is a lot of action these days happening there, coming from different angles. We come from a customer experience angle, but there's other people working on analytics, on marketing, on clienteling tools, on many different things. And I think it's very, very exciting. We will see a lot of transformation, I think, happening in the next 2-3 years.
I do think the sort of eating out area is very much, you know, this is what we do, and people were pushing outwards. And I think this is beginning to turn around, isn't it, where restaurants and cafes are realising that sort of individualisation and personal preferences.
Well, personalisation is a huge topic overall, you know, on websites, with food, with the whole kind of, it's probably something we should talk about on a future show, like the microbiome concept, where it's like personalised food and nutrition for your DNA makeup and all that kind of stuff. You know, it's a really, really interesting topic, really, really hot topic.
But I think the industry's needed to do that for a while because, you know, it has been, we serve this, get on with it, whereas now it has, they're trying to be more personalised, and that's quite difficult to do unless you've got the data.
It is, and as we discussed here, you have to do it also carefully so that you get it right in terms of the experience from the end customer. I think probably the retail industry, first the hospitality industry, hotels and stuff, and retail as well are a bit more advanced than necessarily the food space, the restaurant space. But as you say, Sue, they have to do it now because competition is huge and the real way to differentiate yourself is being able to engage personally with people, and that all that matters. At the end of the day, as a good colleague of mine said, customer experience is about how you felt as a result of going somewhere. It's not about the dish or the drink or the service. It's a combination
it's
of all.
Overall how you feel.
And that's what they need to work on. And that must be as personal, as relevant to you as it gets. So really excited.
Yeah,
very cool.
Very good.
How are you finding it in terms of adoption, though? Because, I mean, so in some of the work that I've done in the past and some of the people that I've spoken to, the restaurant industry in particular, but probably hospitality in general, are a little bit kind of wary of change and wary of technology. But are you finding, how are you finding that?
We are finding it that it depends, essentially. So it depends a lot on the people that you have at the helm of those CEO, marketing director type roles. This is typically an executive decision to change the way they engage with our customers. And not everybody's ready. So we've met with, you know, well-known chains in this town that are simply not in sync with the importance of personalization, but there are some others
who just get it.
So I think there's a change, a shift that's happening, and it may take some time, and everybody will essentially have to get there.
I think the other thing is a lot of people watch, don't they? And they start to see what some chains are doing, think, right, now we've got to do it, you know.
Wonder if that actually comes first from the small independents, and they go, oh, we can see the huge value in this, so let's just do it. And it's a very quick decision to make because they don't have to get, you know, shareholder buy-in and, you know, executive boards to get together and chat about it. They can just go, let's try this out. Whereas a bigger chain, they have a lot more to lose, but also a lot more to gain, I guess.
Yes.
Well, that's fascinating, Adrian. Thank you very much. And
thank you.
If anybody wants to find out more about Cheerfy, it's CHEERFY, so cheerfy.com.
Yes.
And they can go on there and have a really good look at what you're doing. In a minute, we're going to come back and talk to Rahi, and it's good actually. He's bought us some energy drinks, so we can have a little bit. We can have a little pep up in the old energy.
Sounds perfect.
Yeah, and a little taster. So we'll come to Rahi with his virtue drinks later. But meanwhile, let's listen to this. Well, I'm in foodie heaven here. I'm looking at. Can I just ask what your name is?
Carlo.
And Carlo's cooking pasta, and I'm with Simone Remoli. God, I can't get that right. And if anybody's been travelling to Stratford International, there's a food court right on the ground floor. And Pasta Remoli is a really famous place because it's always packed at lunchtime. It's always packed in the evening. And that is because, I suppose, the pasta is so good. Is that right? And how did you start and open this place here? And, you know, particularly near a train station.
Good afternoon to everyone. I'm Simone Remoli from Pasta Remoli, and well, basically, it's always been my dream, you know, to open my own restaurant, because I've been working in the kitchen environment since I was a child, since I was 15 years old in Italy, in Rome. And well, I was working in London to Locanda Locatelli, and they were doing this beautiful product, which was the pasta.
Well, Locatelli's famous in London as being an amazing Italian chef. Yeah,
they just opened. Actually, no, 4 years old. They opened in Dubai a beautiful concept pizza. That's I'm following them everywhere because I love when people is so successful with their passion. You know. It's really, really good. And so basically, and then I saw like a bulb light up on my head, and I said, well, this is a fantastic product. And for the street food and for the fast casual dining that it was coming out on the 4 or 5 years old, I said, this is a fantastic product. We need to make it work. And so I start to produce the pasta in my old job in Quo Vadis, in Dean Street, in Central Seoul, and I was renting the kitchen on the night. I was making my pasta, and the morning I was selling door to door to the restaurant in Central London.
So originally you were actually selling it to chefs, because actually, with all due respect, pasta's not that difficult to make. It's just very time consuming, and you've got to be careful, and you've got to get it right. And a lot of chefs just don't have the time.
Well, in the kitchen environment, when something is really easy to make, it's the most difficult things to make, because you need to make it to perfection. Yes. And famous chef like Alain Ducasse said, the hardest things to make in the kitchen is the aglio olio peperoncino, is the eggs occhio di bue, you know, when you put the eggs, you fry fried eggs. It's the most hard things. Boiled eggs, sorry, not fried eggs. The boiled eggs. So make it to perfection. Cook, because everyone thinks
and be consistent as well.
Everybody, yes, exactly. Everybody thinks it's easy, but everybody wants to perfection. So when something goes wrong, everybody starts to criticize. Yeah. So pasta, our recipe of pasta is perfect. It's thick. It's not overcooking. 3 minutes is ready. And it's absolutely fantastic. And also,
it's real proper fast food, isn't it? Because you know, we see a lot of industrialization in restaurant kitchens and trying to shortcut stuff and work out, you know, how to do things. Actually, pasta is naturally fast food if the base product is amazing.
There you go. That's what is our combination. It's fast food with high quality, with customer service. Because nowadays is many restaurants fail, many restaurants successful, but the news is what makes customer curious about your product. So we make a fantastic high quality product to available to everyone, for everyone. So how does it work? We do 17 different kind of fresh pasta. We got 11 different fresh sauce. You can choose the pasta, you can choose the sauce, and you can choose the cheese to grate it on top. You can eat in our restaurant, you can take it away and eat it in your house, or you can also go for the option cook at home, which is you can choose the
which is what I do, actually. I quite often stop by day. No, not every day, but I do quite often stop and take some home, because if you can get amazing pasta, it's you can make a great sauce with it, can't you?
Exactly, and that's another thing. It's like as a takeaway, it's a new takeaway that you can cook by yourself instead of to order takeaway and at your home is arrive a dish that obviously is bland, is floppy, it doesn't have the same taste because it's been 30 minutes in a scooter, and obviously it's not fresh. Like this, you can take home. You boil the pasta for 2 minutes. You heat up the sauce in a different pan. You drain the pasta together. Plate it up. Drizzle olive oil. Sparkle of Parmesan on top.
It's maybe some fun. Little chopped basil.
Chopped basil on top, which
a little bit of black pepper.
Oh yeah,
God, you know. Here. You so I'm going to have a look at what Carlo's been doing here. Now, so Carlo's got some hot plates here. You've got stuff bubbling away there. What are you? I know your English isn't brilliant. I know you can do it. What have you got bubbling away there? Just some hot water.
Yeah, the water.
The water to cook the pasta.
Yeah, and then so if somebody does an order, you then get your pasta here. Cook it for literally 2 minutes.
Yes.
That's all.
Yes.
And you've got some great sauces behind me. So explain some of the sauces here. I know you've got a signature dish, haven't you?
Yes, we do have signature dish. We have a linguine with lobster. So it's a fresh lobster. You take a pan, some garlic, some chili, olive oil, chopped basil, and then you put a half lobster in it, some cherry tomato, white wine, just you need to put just a spoon of our tomato sauce, and then some cooking water. Sear it for around 3-4 minutes. Join the pasta together, and it is done. Almost the meat of the lobster need to attach to the still in the body. So because it's important, my vision is that if the food is good when it's alive, every vegetable, every fish, every, you don't need to do any too much to it.
So if you have great ingredients, don't muck around with them.
There you go. You need to just raise the flavor. You don't need to change it. So you need to evaluate their flavor. So prawns
and have things that bring each other's flavor out. So have things with which great combinations.
Example, I do the sofrito. The sofrito, I'll do it always at the end. I don't do it in the beginning, because in the beginning, it doesn't give the right flavor to the ingredient. Sometimes it covers it up. So what I do, I put just a bit of olive oil. I do it there, and then we got the sofrito on top at the end on the pasta, and jump it together. You will see the flavor there. This is the arrabbiata.
Okay, so Carlo's doing what he does best. Here he is. He's not a man of many words, but so it looks like you've got a bit of garlic there, a little bit chili, and some olive oil.
Yeah, olive oil and salt.
And a bit of salt, okay. He's got an amazing, lovely tomato sauce here. It's great colour, and you can see it's great because it's still got... Oh, God, that chili is making me cough. You can see it's great because it's got the seeds and all sorts of other things in there. And that's now going on your hot plate. Oh, wow, that chili and that garlic's making me cough. And what ravioli is that? It's ravioli filled with...
It's aubergine ravioli. Is inside have the aubergine and roast tomato.
Aubergines, such a nice.
Yeah. And some provolone cheese inside. And basically, with arrabbiata sauce, you can feel all the feeling of the ravioli. And also, you see, our customer just order the pasta and order the sauce. But obviously, there is some combination in our menu that is not the right one. So our waiters in the front are ready to give a suggestion for something wrong and advice. And customer always accept our... and they're really happy.
So we've got an amazing ravioli there, the stuff full of aubergine with some great cheese and with a lovely tomato sauce. It looks like somebody's going to take that home and have probably... just an amazing meal at home, which is going to take 2 minutes to do.
There you go. And she ordered a buffalo mozzarella to grate it on top, which we give on a separate top, in a separate pot, which she's going on. She's going to open the box and she will
shred the mozzarella.
On top.
And God, will melt dearie it me. I might find out the address of that lady and follow follow that package home. That's great. And have you any plans to expand? Because obviously everybody loves pasta, don't they? And if you bring a family here, there is literally something for everybody, isn't there?
At the moment we have another branch in Finsbury Park. So at the moment we are 2 branches. We're gonna open the third one this year, and probably in Bank, close to Bank Station for the office, because as I said, the beauty of this product is 3 minutes is ready. Less than 3 minutes, high quality food, ready takeaway. We are really quick. We arrive during the Olympic Games, which is the reason why we opened in Westfield, because it was the Olympic Games the year after we were opening. So we organize ourselves. We arrive to do around 650 pasta per day in only
650
9 hours.
A day.
Yes.
Wow.
Five years ago.
And I'm standing in this kitchen. It's not big, and I know you've moved actually, because you used to be over there, didn't you?
Really,
but I would imagine that the kitchen was smaller than this, probably. Yeah.
It's actually the kitchen. It was exactly like this, but obviously after 5 years of experience, we make it better. Our expansion plan is to open a centralized kitchen, bigger centralized kitchen, where we will produce our pasta and our sauce, and we will go franchising. So basically, we have a wonderful training thing, which I will build. We build it already. We are a 3 person at the moment, but we want to arrive to 10 person to training.
Because training and ingredients are going to be everything. I mean, it's great, isn't it, being an owner, where you're literally standing here watching poor old Carlo, you know, making sure he does it exactly right.
Every day I do that.
Of course you do, but as it gets bigger, that becomes hard. So you've got to really keep a grip on the quality and particularly the ingredients.
Yes. This is the secret. I'm the owner of the company, but money wise is for our accountants. What I need to do on a daily basis is check the feedback from our customer, improve our service, check that the sauce is always a standard. And when your guys in the kitchen, in the front, feel that you are there, they feel protected, they feel safe to train in the right way. And what customer loves most is our pasta, definitely, but it's also our guys' passion about the food. It's not like any other environment where you to go, you are just a number. I don't like to say, they never need to say next please. I hate this word. Okay. I really hate this word because it looks like you are
industrialized. Yeah, absolutely.
And you just done to make, no, every customer counts. And the most important, I prefer to do 50 customer less per day, but do
it really well.
Proper, because...
Okay, well, I'm just going to end this interview now. I'm going to ask you the classic question. Well, two questions, actually. Tell me the secret of an amazing pesto. What's the best pesto, the sort of recipe that you would recommend? And also the best pasta. So I do make pasta at home. I use loads and loads of eggs, like really, really fresh eggs. And I do freeze it and then I roll it out when I need it. Is that okay to do that? Or does it damage it?
When it's a fresh product, it's always to use fresh. But you can freeze them, but it needs to be a filled pasta. You cannot freeze a plain pasta. Because to freeze a plain pasta, you need to blast chill them first, which means to bring it
so
to...
So it doesn't get cold quick enough. Okay, yeah, well, I won't freeze mine anymore then.
If you freeze them, it means... The ravioli, you can freeze that. Obviously, it's going to break it up. If you blast chill them, that means you bring to lower temperature straight away. Yeah. It's going to be fine. And also, no more than 6 months, you can freeze it. The pasta.
Okay, so I'm not going to do that anymore. So now tell me the secret of the best pesto. I do like pesto.
The best pesto, I'm using, Genovese people from Genova, that is going to kill me. I'm using pecorino instead of parmesan in my basil pesto. The reason why is because I don't
slightly
like...
Slightly more tart and not quite as salty.
It's a little bit more salty.
It's
than
more salty.
Yeah, pecorino romano is more salty than parmesan. That's why, because I don't like to use too much salt for healthy reason and stuff. So, but the pecorino cheese, the salt is from the milk, so it means it's a natural salt. And obviously, I like to use pecorino. And the real secret is the quantity of peanuts you put related to the basil. And the olive oil at the end, you need to blend it to get the right consistency. But I'm using pecorino instead of parmesan. That's what I'm doing in my pesto.
My mouth is just watering terribly here. Carlo's cooking. I'm just looking at this amazing pesto in front of me. And I have to say to anybody, if you're anywhere near Stratford International Station, don't just come here to shop. Don't just go to the train station. Go to Pasta Romoli and you will not be let down. It's really, really good. And I would recommend the lobster linguine. Yeah. That's your signature dish.
Yeah, we open every day, Monday to Sunday, from 10 o'clock until 9 o'clock in the until 9 o'clock in the evening, and our staff is always here to help you for your first time to choose the best pasta, to choose the best sauce. If you need to make a dinner for your family, for your friends,
get it here and pretend it's yours. That's what I would suggest. I would suggest. Thank you so much. And Pasta Romoli, and listeners, you have to come here. Thank you very much.
Thank you to all. Thank you.
Fascinating stuff. Now we're back in the studio and we've got Adrian from Cheerfy, which was all very interesting.
It's Rahi from Cheerfy, I believe.
No, it's Rahi from
no,
Virtue
Rahi
Drinks.
No, Rahi from Virtue. Oh, we get
Rahi
so confused.
Rahi from Virtue Drinks. So we've done all the technical stuff. Now we've got physical stuff in front of us. And I've got two lovely cans here. So they're like sort of Red Bull sort of size cans. And I've got Virtue Sparkling Energy Water. And I've got lemon and lime and berries. And I've just been told in no uncertain times by Rahi not to drink it yet, because he wants to tell me all about it, because it's got interesting taste, I think.
Yes.
Before I do that, though, we're sitting in the studio here in the middle of London, and you make thousands of these, I presume, thousands and thousands and thousands of these. You arrived at the studio, you didn't have any, yet to go around the shop and buy some from the shop around the corner.
Yes, usually.
So you've made this, packaged it. Sent it down the shop down the road. You've now come out, you've had to go and buy some with your own money and then bring it into the studio.
Exactly. It wasn't the original plan, but I had a builder at home this morning and I didn't make it to the office just because he took so long. So on the way here, fortunately, one of our stockists...
You've had to buy your own drinks.
Exactly, yeah.
That's hilarious. So about Virtue. So this is a range of energy water. If I look at the can, it's naturally contained zero sugar, zero calories, no sweeteners. And the energy comes from natural sources, including, I don't even know what this is, yerba mate?
Mate, yes, exactly.
Yerba mate. I'm going to ask you all those in a minute.
Sure.
guarana, which I always thought sort of made you a bit, I'll talk about that in a minute, sure. And ginseng. So tell me about yerba mate first. What is that?
Yes, so each can itself has the same amount of natural caffeine content as a cup of coffee or the other leading energy drinks brands, which is 80 milligrams. And predominantly we use this South American tea leaf called yerba mate. And it contains more antioxidants than green tea. It's got about 24 vitamins and minerals and 15 amino acids even inside it. And it's considered a natural antioxidant powerhouse. But with all this, it's also very naturally high in caffeine. And what we do is we blend that with guarana, which has twice the caffeine as a green coffee bean. And it also comes from the Amazon. And then we also add ginseng. So together, you get a really nice blend of energy. And it's all very much sustained. You don't get the sort of highs and lows you'd get from traditional energy drinks.
So you are looking fit and healthy. Is that because you live on this stuff?
Yes, I have three a day.
You're actually 78 three years old. Look at him. Look, he looks amazing. Right, so I'm going to... Can I taste mine now?
Yes, please.
Okay, yeah. So I've got berries. So I'm just going to open my can
here. You've got a berry one. I have a lime one then.
Yeah. So.
And just to give you an idea, the drinks themselves, they actually contain no sweeteners whatsoever. So what we do is we use natural fruit flavours, which come from the skin of the fruits, and they're extracted as essences.
Mm. I was going to ask about that in terms of how it's produced.
Can you say something while I'm slurping mine? Because it doesn't make good radio when I'm drinking.
I love yerba mate. I'm from Argentina, actually.
We
drink it a lot there. And this is lovely.
Thank you.
It's very refreshing.
That's not very descriptive, is it, Adrian? Just saying it's lovely. explain what you're tasting.
you're testing my English eloquency here. Okay. So
I would say it's...
Okay, in terms of color, it looks like a white wine to me.
Yeah, it does a bit, doesn't it?
Slightly cloudy white wine, maybe young white wine.
The sort of white wine you get at a garage. That's what it looks like.
No. Sort of maybe dry in flavor.
Yeah, it's quite dry, isn't it? Got that kind of tannin of wine almost.
Yeah, exactly.
I guess that's the tea.
That's right. So yeah, it doesn't taste sugarish at all, which is good.
It reminds me a little bit of... sparkling water, and you get that slight minerally feel to it, don't you think?
But it's only slightly sparkling. It doesn't feel like like you're something that is like a full on carbonated. Is it a natural sparkle?
What we do is we actually do add carbon dioxide, but when working on the flavors, the option is you can either go very carbonated at about 5-6%, which is what most soft drinks are, and often it's quite difficult to drink because of that. So in being a water and making it as easy to drink as possible, we put our carbonation level slightly less than the average soft drink. And it makes it a lot more... Yeah, I mean, you can drink it quite quickly and actually enjoy it and sort of taste the flavours at the same time.
Yeah, it's very refreshing. The lemon and lime one is...
I've just had the lemon and lime one now. Actually, I prefer this one. The berry one's good, but I think the natural lemon and lime comes out a bit stronger on this.
The lemon and lime flavour feels more natural. The berry one, it reminds me a little bit of like a Robinson's juice, which of course it isn't. It's got, you know, it's not...
It's not Robinson's juice, guys.
It's not, no. But it has that kind of reminiscent thing, and maybe that's a good thing for some people. Yeah.
Yes, with the lemon and lime, I think people recognise it a lot more just because as a nation as well, we drink so much lemonade, I think, growing up. So people are sort of accustomed to having a lemon and lime drink. Yet again, our sales split, quite strangely, has been just about 45-55, more towards the berries even, which was actually a bit of a surprise. Then again, it is a bit more unique to have a water with a hint of berries. So I think that's sort of played a part in that.
I much prefer that from the, you know, you get the flavoured waters now. So you get, is it Volvic and all those, and they have a lemon and lime.
They just taste really, really fake.
Got some horrible twang stuff, aftertaste to them. That's a bit cloyy. That isn't at all, it's really fresh, isn't it? Really refreshing.
Thank you. Yes, those generally, with the majority of the major players within water, do add some sort of sweetener, and often it will be sugar, or they'll have a sugar-free variant which uses an artificial sweetener. And again, yes, they have very strong tastes that not everyone enjoys. Yet the nation is so used to having such heavily sweetened drinks. Some people are actually so used to having those that if they did have something like a Virtue Energy water, they might almost question it, being like, where is the sweetness? Just because that's what they're so used to having grown up in most countries these days even.
The thing I really like about this is I know you're committed to spreading positivity.
Exactly, yes.
That's great. I'm not quite sure what that is, but I'll ask you in a minute. Sure. And for every one of your drinks sold, you donate 500 litres of clean drinking water to those in need.
Yes, exactly.
And even when you go and buy your own.
Yes, that still contributes to it. Yes, it does. Yes, I'm
which
doing
you did
my
this
part.
Morning, yes. And that's drop for drop. Tell us a little bit about that charity.
Sure. Well, when launching the new drink, and I can give you a bit more background to Virtue and how it started as well. But we'd originally started as an iced tea brand. I was generally quite frustrated with a lot of the options within drinks in the UK, having grown up here and just seen how heavily sweetened and sugary and unhealthy the majority of soft drinks were. So initially launched a healthier iced tea, and in the process of that came up with the ideas of the energy water and actually moving towards naturally sugar-free. And with that, I thought, I'm doing this and I love doing it, but I'd love to do some good at the same time now, just to motivate myself, the team, and really give the brand a reason, a mission. And in doing that, our mission became to provide positive energy to as many people as possible. And in line with that, I did want to work with the charity. So I looked at the most suitable partners, and with the drink being an energy water, I thought, let's do something with clean water. And I mean, The stats are about 600 million people in the world even have limited access to clean drinking water, or some of them have pretty much none at times, which is almost outrageous this day and age. Mm. And I thought, let's do something where we can actually be a part of that and be a part of the solution. So looked at all the different water charities and got in touch with Drop for Drop. And what we've done is, yeah, they've got a really good partnership. And that measure itself, the 500 litres, comes from every clean drinking water well we fund. That's the lifetime equivalent value, that 500 litres of clean drinking water. And with them, what they can do is they can show us exactly where they're building these wells. So they're great as a partner, and as a smaller startup brand, you can actually have quite a close relationship And really see your results, rather than working with a massive charity where...
Well, you don't mean much to them, really.
Exactly, and it's hard to really see the impact you're actually making.
Yeah, that's fabulous. That's really, really good.
Thank you.
And I know that you're in quite a few stores now, so obviously, like everybody, going through Amazon and Ocado, I think.
Yes.
But also you're in Holland and Barrett, Planet Organic, As Nature Intended. I could just go on and on and on.
Sure.
And you've got a number of endorsements and mentions from the press. So
yes,
it must be a good feeling at the moment that are you beginning to feel like it's starting to roll, it's starting to get traction, your business,
it's
your
strange
brand?
Because I think it's never where you want it to be. And then as soon as things are still going well, you want them to go even better. And it's almost
sliding
ridiculous
scale.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, sometimes I get an order from a new customer at the time. For a minute, I'll be very excited. Then I look at the numbers and be like, why didn't they order more? And suddenly you just want more and more. But at the same time, yes, I'm very grateful for where the brand's come to at the moment. And what we'd done was, with the iced teas, got those into even more chains. And they're still in, I mean, the likes of Superdrug and other quite major chains. And what we're doing is focusing on energy as a category moving forward, just because I think our product is a lot more of a game changer. It is the only natural sugar-free energy drink in this country, which is quite a big claim. And with that, I do want to focus on natural energy as a brand now. I think the product's a lot stronger. I think there's a lot more of an opportunity there as well to actually really create a better energy drink. In terms of where it is now, I'm confident and happy with the product. I think we can always improve it in different ways, whether that's branding and flavour. Yet, I think aspiration-wise, I do want as many people as possible to be able to drink these drinks. And saying that, our distribution is still very limited. So it's great getting the media mentions and things, as we went over briefly. Yet at the same time, it's quite difficult because you want everyone to know about your brand, but if not everyone can buy your brand, it's difficult to actually do both at the same time.
Scaling up is really hard in the food business, I think.
Yes,
it's really tough.
Well, we were talking earlier, weren't we, about how challenging it is to run a food business in any day and age. But you know, especially now when it's this kind of very... You know,
it's like the new rock star to
It's a very sexy thing, isn't it? Yeah. Like, oh, I love food and I'm fed up with my big corporate job, so let's start a food brand. And but it's really, really challenging.
Yeah, and interestingly, with your background, I know that you've got a background in management and economics and stuff like that. And you've obviously done your stint around other food brands.
Yes.
I do get worried about the number of people piling into the food sector, as Guy said. And I'm not convinced they're making a living out of it, because it's really tough. And there's a lot of Me Too brands as well. So you'll find loads of people making chocolate, or loads of people making ice cream, or loads of people, you know, doing these things. And there's just not room for everybody, is there? And you've got to get your business model right. Otherwise, it's a hobby, really.
Definitely. And I agree with you. I mean, trade show after trade show, as I'm aware you both attend. And
I have to eat everything when I'm there as well.
Yeah, it's terrible. Yeah,
it's really tough.
No, it really is tough. And with all of that, every trade show you see even more brands popping up. You almost think there couldn't be another popcorn brand.
There could not be another gin, surely.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, how many more gins do I have to taste?
Exactly. It is across categories. And I mean, yeah, as you said, chocolate, there's so many different ones, and they might have one minor point of differentiation, yet that's not enough today to make it a major brand, just because you almost need to own the category you're in or whatever it is you're trying to achieve. And I do see that. I mean, it can come across when you see brands like Innocent and the few, I wouldn't necessarily say anomalies, but the few real successes. When you see these brands that have become national and absolutely everywhere, it does look glamorous. And I mean, a lot of these brands have done it very quickly considering what they've turned it into. And you see some of the figures and everything as well. And people get excited and you almost create a product. And I generally made that mistake myself with the iced teas. I thought I'd created something revolutionary at the time, and it was far from revolutionary. It was slightly healthier than some of the other options.
My favourite conversation is somebody comes up to us, because we do a lot of these radio things at these shows, and says, look at this, we're doing insects. We're the only people in the UK doing insects. Mm. You're not really, mate, because you're the 10th person I've interviewed, you know, to about insects. But
yes,
you genuinely have to be different, don't you?
Definitely,
and
I think, for the long term.
You've got to search the rest of the market to see that you're different, I think.
Definitely. Mm. And even saying that, with our energy waters now, it's made, like, having seen it personally, it's made our life so much easier as a brand, having something so unique. As a buyer who runs a store, you only really want to be bringing something in that's going to add value. So you've got only so much shelf space. If you're bringing something else in, it's got to replace something else. So it's got to actually be different or better or give reason for a customer to buy it over something else. And with our iced teas, we got it into quite a few chains and stores, and it was almost difficult to grow it just because it was only slightly healthier than some of the others, and not enough people drink iced tea in this country anyway. So that was a struggle in itself.
We're not American.
Exactly. Unfortunately, it's...
Yeah.
And I was naive to think we could change that ourselves, but without the big budgets or the product that was good enough, we couldn't quite do that.
Moma, I always call it Moma, but I think it's called Mama. The porridge oats. I always get everything wrong, it's fine.
Yes,
the porridge oats. And I know you work there, and obviously we were talking to those guys a couple of weeks ago on the programme, and I said, oh, isn't it great? You've really managed to get literally everywhere. He said, yeah, but it has taken me 10 years, you know, and it is
an overnight success in 10 years, as they always say, yeah.
To actually get to that point where he's literally now beginning to be everywhere, it's taken a very long time.
Yes, and I mean, even with us, now we're starting to go into a lot more stores and we're in a lot of the right places that I do want it to be. But I mean, it's been almost 2.5 years and it's still got a long, long way to go. If you think there's all the major supermarkets that we're not necessarily in, I mean, we might be talking to... It still does take a long time. And I think a lot of people naively might go into this industry and think they can replicate what some of the major brands have done. But it is very difficult to do that. It takes, I mean, two real things to create value within a food and drink brand. And that is distribution and brand awareness.
Yeah, distribution's critical.
Yes.
And I really don't think people are making money. I just don't think there are many people making money out of food. I think people are doing it because they love the sector. And they're doing it because they're in love with their product. But I think there's huge and huge numbers of people who aren't making any money.
Mm, very, very difficult, especially when you're talking about something physical and tangible as well. Mm. Not only have you got to move it around the place in terms of distribution, but you also have to store it in places as well. So, you know, it's taking up space, which is also, you know, which is money as well in its own right. It's, there's so many moving parts to it.
Definitely.
Is there anything in particular that you find a challenge at the moment, or anything in particular that you think that you've really mastered and is allowing you to grow and have the success that you're seeing at the moment?
Well, there's always challenges, and I agree on the money side. What I've realised, and particularly with a consumer good like an energy drink, which is fast moving, it is all about volume. And when you scale and when you do get more distribution, at the end of the day, you're getting more revenue and you can start growing your marketing. And it really is a volumes game in the long term. And with that being said, yes, there are a lot of niche brands that might actually be hobbies and they do launch into all the high-end places and everything. But to actually become profitable, you do need a few of the major retailers.
It's still a business, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. So it's very difficult to get to that level. In terms of challenges, there's all sorts of challenges. And I mean, every day, new ones and different ones come up. And I mean, you learn and try not to do the same ones again, but you'll obviously stumble and come across others. For us, it's been getting the product right was... one that has taken a long time, and I'm confident in our product now. As I said, I still think we can improve it, but that was a major challenge in itself, getting the right product and getting to where it is now. With that, it is distribution as well, so getting retailers to take it on, and as you said, it's so competitive, this space. So within drinks itself and energy drinks, even though we are unique and different, a lot of the retailers will want to show that proof that it actually works. It's almost that chicken and egg where you need to get on the shelf to show it works, but then it's difficult to get on the shelf. So what we've done is we've focused on the natural and health channels, which has helped us.
You've also got to be selling all the time, haven't you?
Definitely.
You've got to sell. It's not going to sell itself.
Exactly.
You've got to have that sales and marketing operation sorted.
Yes. And a lot of people say your startup of food, I think this applies to a lot of industries, but food and drink definitely, especially in packaged goods, your business depends on your best salesman, essentially, because at the end of the day, you've got to be getting it into stores and getting it into places and getting people to buy it.
I mean, for you, Adrian, you're sort of more business to business, aren't you, which is a different sort of model. But in some respects, that's easier, because if you can get into a chain, you know, and you're talking to business people. But I would suggest that consumers are a bit more fickle. There's so much choice. So I'm not sure whether I'd prefer to be in business to consumer or business to business.
Tough.
I think it's tough. I think both have its own advantages and disadvantages. Mm. So the challenges of B2B is that we have a discrete set of customers that we have to convince. They're not that many at the end of the day. So it has a higher degree of, it's a bit more binary. Whereas in B2C, I guess it's all about a marketing game rather than a sales game. And it has another set of challenges. So both are tough, I think.
Both tough, yes. Still, I love being in the food industry, because I do think it's surrounded with passionate people who just love what they're doing, and they're also very helpful to each other as well, which I don't find in other sectors.
I don't know. I've worked in a few different areas of my time, and I think there's helpful people and there's horrible people, and if you position yourself around the helpful, friendly, useful types, then you'll see more of that and less of the other.
I do think, though, that people in the food industry are happy to share their journey and say, I've tried this, that didn't work. And they do seem to help each other in business a little bit more than some other sectors.
I mean, I hail from the web industry, where everybody at a web conference, they're like, here are the slides with all of my secrets, and go and use them yourself.
That's just kind of open source. That's stupid, though, actually.
Well, perhaps.
I mean, open source, how do you make money on that? If you explain it, I don't get that.
Well, open source isn't a money-making kind of thing.
No, of course not.
But yeah.
Yeah, well, of course they're selling this. Oh, they're all mad, aren't they? Completely mad.
I think we all are.
Yeah. So if you're interested in Rahi's lovely drinks, they're called Virtue Drinks, and we've got lemon and lime here, and the berries, two current flavours. And you can go on to virtuedrinks.com and find out all about those. Plans? Any sort of... What's the vision of the future? Taking over the world or having 48 different, flavours?
Taking over the world, definitely, with the brand itself. and, I mean, yeah, the plan is to really do that distribution and awareness at the same time. So trying to get into more and more stores, making sure it works in all the stores we're getting into as well. Yeah. So with that, increasing consumer awareness, getting into the right people's hands, letting people know what the drink actually is as well. And eventually definitely looking at more products within energy as well. Just different ways to provide positive energy and create products that we can actually be proud of, that ideally will have no sugar as well.
So brand extension.
Exactly, yes.
Well, thank you very much for joining us. I'm going to finish my lemon and lime, I prefer.
Yeah, actually. I think that was my preference as well, I think.
I like
nice and refreshing.
And yep. So thank you very much to Rahi of Virtue Drinks. Thank you. And Adrian.
Thank you.
With something completely different, something techie. That's really good.
We like a bit of that around here, don't we?
We like a little bit of techie. And just to let everybody know that, don't forget, we have got our first ever Food Talk Awards. So if you have got something exciting and new and different, like Adrian's, or if you've got a new drink or foodstuffs or whatever, you should be going onto the foodtalkawards.com website and entering. We want as many people entering as possible. And the prize is just a brilliant prize, Guy. A prize is to come on the radio show with us.
Oh, what could be better?
I know. I mean...
Well,
I
maybe
mean,
tasting all of the things that have been entered. Maybe that's...
Yeah, that's pretty cool as well. But no, so it would allow you to really, really promote your product and come on the show with me and Guy. So that's good. So go onto the website In the meantime, of course, don't forget we've got the normal Food Talk website, which is foodtalk.co.uk. And if you want to give Guy any abuse or comment on anything food related, please tweet us at Food Talk Show.
Please do.
So another good programme this week. And thank you very much, Adrian. And thank you, Rahi.
Thanks, guys.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye.